television nerds. My name is Anthony Marco, and welcome to TV ABCs, where we have conversations about Canadian television before cameras, before cuts, before channels, and explore how the people behind your favorite shows are being creative. This week, Carmen Moore. Carmen has worked steadily in television and film for two decades. She was nominated for the American First Americans in the Arts Award for her role in Brothers of the Frontier in 1996. She played Dawn Star in the movie Spooky House 2002. And in 2004, she worked with John Woo for the TV series The Robinsons Lost in Space. Carmen was nominated for her performance as Simone in Godiva's at the 2006 Leo Awards and won the Women in Film and Video's Artistic Merit Award for her portrayal of Rebecca in the Canadian independent feature Unnatural and Accidental. From 2012 to 2014, Carmen has had leading roles on two Canadian hit series. She played Lorene Casway on Arctic Air, for which she was nominated for a Leo Award in 2012, and she continues her role as Leona Stoney on the multi-award-winning series Blackstone, which won the Best Dramatic Series at the 2012 Leos. Carmen was nominated for both a Gemini Award and a Leo Award in 2012 for Blackstone, and won the Leo for Best Lead Performance in 2011. We'll talk about all of this and why Gwen Stefani leads to some bad sense memory in my conversation with Carmen Moore. I have to say this, that in over the past couple of years, that originally it was Diane Wilde and myself doing the TVA podcast, and we constantly see Blackstone coming up for award after award after award, and I'd seen snippets and I'd seen scenes, but what I've done over the past week, knowing that I was going to talk to you, is I went back and I watched a few episodes from season one, which people can do on the APTN website.
Yes.
And it's like, wow. Because I hadn't seen it from the beginning. Like right. I'd seen a couple parts of episodes for here and there, and I'd never known whether I didn't get a picture of it at the time as to whether it might be something I'm interested in. Mm-hmm. After watching two episodes, I think I'm hooked.
And it's I hear that a lot.
And it's because the stories are so universal. Yes, it's in a location that may be different than a lot of people are used to, but that's what makes it exciting. But right. The stories are so universal. It's no different than it's no different than great theater, great plays, great songs, great stories. I mean, everything is right there. It has to be an amazing concept to be in that environment, transferring a great story just to that environment.
Oh, it is. Absolutely. You know, I've heard a lot over the years that we've been doing Blackstone, you know, and we get sort of mixed reviews, even amongst, you know, all the great press that we get and all the awards that we've been nominated for. There are still a lot of people that are on the fence about it, you know, specifically people that live on reserves and, you know, that fear sets in of you're painting us in a bad light or you're giving Native people a bad name or, you know, that kind of thing. But like you said, the universal themes are there. I mean, these stories really could be set in any community anywhere in the world. I mean, if you get stuck on the fact that it's that Blackstone is set on a reserve, then I think you're kind of missing the magic of Blackstone.
Yeah, for sure. And I mean, the thing that even watching the first couple episodes, I mean, I'm from Hamilton, Ontario. I'm not too far from Six Nations here in Ontario. But admittedly, other than driving through that community once in a while, you know, I've never been a part of it or taken part of it. And so I'm hesitant even when watching Blackstone to think that it's painting. I don't know enough to say that it's painting a realistic reality of anything. I know that I don't necessarily trust the news to paint a realistic reality.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
But I also don't know enough about this. But to me, that's secondary. Mm-hmm. To me, if I'm watching this as a television, I'm not watching this as a documentary. I'm watching this as a story. Mm-hmm. And as a story, I would like to think that in some ways it's accurate. It bothers me that in some ways that it might be accurate.
Yeah.
But it does transcend a certain place and time. And so I'm wondering, you know, when you think of some of the stuff that you're tackling over the course of a season, and I've read ahead to look at some of the some of the plots and how they're going to play out and stuff like that. There's so much happening right now in the real world that is affecting First Nations communities in Canada, that there has to be this endless well to draw from.
Absolutely. I mean, every storyline that Blackstone tackles, our writers have ripped straight from headlines. I mean, it is disturbing to think that most everything in Blackstone is actually happening somewhere in Canada or the United States. But the sad fact is that it is happening.
Yeah. How much do you get that reach over to, because I mean, First Nations communities, I mean, we're not talking, for the most part, don't need to respect the 49th parallel, right? Yeah. I mean, what kind of feedback comes in from communities down in the U.S.?
Well, we've only just started airing in the U.S. on Hulu this year. So they're getting a taste of Blackstone now. I think people are kind of binge watching the first three seasons now that they can get it. The feedback coming in is the same as when it started 5 years ago with first season of Blackstone in Canada. Is like, wow, where have I been? There's so much going on this show. We're being compared to The Sopranos. You know, it's just... It's the same. They're excited that Blackstone is one of those shows that is mostly an all native cast, and there's nothing like it on TV right now.
Right.
It's bringing, you know, job opportunities for First Nations people straight off reservations.
Sure.
The storylines are exciting, as disturbing as they are, but, you know, first and foremost, Blackstone is a TV show. Right. Yes, our storylines come from headlines, things that our writers have read in the media, but it's also entertaining.
Sure.
It's a very entertaining show, and it's got very, very talented people on the show, and I think that's exciting for, you know, not only First Nations people, but for anybody who's watching Blackstone to see very talented First Nations artists up and coming.
For sure. Now, when you first learned about this character, first of all, did you have to audition for the character?
I did, yeah.
So how was that process coming into it? Because I would imagine that playing a character that has such a prominent role right from the very first episode of the show, that I don't even know if you would know that in advance, but that had to be something that was exciting to sink your teeth into.
Absolutely. Okay, so here's how this went down. This character was actually written for a woman in her 50s who had a background in politics, in First Nations politics. And of course, you know, the breakdown went out to, you know, all across Canada. They were looking for the lead of this new series, Blackstone. They were just doing the pilot and they wanted, you know, to audition all First Nations women in the industry, no matter what age they were. So I auditioned for this character knowing that I was, you know, not in the age range that they were looking for. But Ron Scott, our creator and our executive producer, director, saw my tape and liked it. And he came to Vancouver to sit down with me and talk to me about it. Now, I did something a little bold and I said, you know, that's not really interesting to throw somebody in this role who knows what she's doing. You know, this is a TV show. You need it to be exciting. You know, throw somebody in there a lot younger that has no idea what she's doing, and that's entertainment. And he bought it.
Sure. There's that immediate tension there within the character who's wading into it for the first time.
Exactly. Right. So, he bought it. They cast me as Leona and, you know, me as the actor was kind of thrown in fish out of water as well, because I don't know anything about Native politics. I didn't grow up on reserve. I've spent some time on reserves across Canada, you know, traveling with different theater companies and stayed on reserves, but I didn't grow up on one. So, it's been a learning process for me as well, you know, jumping into this role. And, I'm really glad he listened to me because it's been a great 5 years.
Well, so I'm curious, as you got thrown into that, how much of a did you want to dive further in than your character was already there, or were you very conscious about keeping your personal knowledge of it at the level of your character?
Well, I think I sort of operate on that level in every character that I portray, is that I as the actor know as much as the character does.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, because I mean, I would think there'd be a temptation there to, you know, read up on a bunch of history and see where this has gone and where this has gone. But I'm just wondering whether you think, from a craft perspective, that's going to betray your ability to maybe play it as innocently or as shockingly as you might want to.
Yes.
I think that's fair. Where do you shoot, by the way?
We shoot in Edmonton and mostly in a small town just outside of Edmonton called Namao.
Okay. And that's where all the seasons have been shot?
Yep.
And you said most of the cast and most of the crew, First Nations as well?
Not most of the crew. I mean, our writers are First Nations. Our director, like I mentioned him earlier, Ron sure. Scott, our creator, he is Métis. Most of our cast is First Nations. Who else can I think of? I think that's about it. Yeah.
I'm just very curious because APTN is such an, it's one of the most widely distributed networks in Canada, channels in Canada. Hmm. And you don't hear much about it. I mean, every single cable station has to have APTN on it.
Right.
But
nobody knows.
Well, people know, but there's not enough. It doesn't, many times there's no money to promote it on other stations. Yeah. It's not like you see commercials on CTV or CBC about an APTN show.
Wouldn't that be nice?
It would be. It would be very nice.
Yeah.
Because I would have found this thing that I might be addicted to now.
Yeah, right.
A bit earlier. So also in addition to that, we just found out earlier this year, you had a lead character in Arctic Air as well. And I have to imagine that was, considering that was a show that was really considered to be, a bit of a juggernaut for the first couple seasons that it was out, it had to be a bit shocking, when it got cut back earlier this year.
It was. Absolutely. You know, we had been led to believe right up until probably 2 weeks before. No, that's not right. Yeah, right up until the moment that we found out that we were going to get a fourth season. It was pretty much set in stone that we were getting fourth season, and then out of the blue, it was done. So yeah, it was a shock. It was a disappointment. But you know, that's just kind of the way it is, you know, especially in the Canadian film industry, like things get canceled for absolutely no rhyme or reason all the time. These great, amazing shows that are really popular and getting good ratings, and then they're just gone. And who knows why?
Yeah. Well, in the case of the CBC, I mean, with the crap that they're going through now with all the budget cuts and all of that stuff, I'm sure that contributed to it as well. But
oh, absolutely. Yeah. I think CBC was in a bit of a shambles as that was happening, but, I don't know.
But it's had to have been an interesting few years for you being a lead in two different series. And now admittedly, we're not shooting like 22 and 24 episode series like they did back in the 70s and 80s, but still two very distinct jobs, two very distinct, structures, management structures that you're having to deal with.
Mm-hmm.
How was it juggling that? Did you have any conflicts that you were trying to deal with while doing both the series at the same time?
No, it's funny. You know, I had Blackstone, we had done first season, and then, Arctic Air came to me and gave me the offer. And it was, we were supposed to shoot, second season of Blackstone right at the same time that Arctic Air would have been starting. And so, I went to Arctic Air and I said, look, I can't just bail on Blackstone because they don't have the money to option me. It wouldn't be fair. And I committed to them first. So, thanks for the offer. And then, you know, a few days later they came back and said, okay, you can do Blackstone too, which is actually unheard of for a show to do that because I was optioned on Arctic Air.
Right.
Which means I had a 3 year plus first year contract. So I was tied to them for four seasons. Mm-hmm. So when they came back and said that I could do Blackstone at the same time, that was a shock. And, I was absolutely delighted because I was really excited about both shows. And then it just, as it turned out, Arctic Air went to camera, and for some reason the funding for Blackstone was getting pushed and getting pushed and getting pushed. So we didn't have the funding in place to go to camera the way, over the summer, like we had done for the first two seasons. And they pushed to shooting in the spring. So it worked out perfectly. I shot Arctic Air from July to December, and then we started shooting Blackstone in March.
Wow.
And Blackstone is always a 6 to 8 week shoot. So it worked out absolutely perfectly. There was no scheduling conflicts at all.
It's a great circumstance because, I mean, so many in talking with several actors now that have these Canadian series, but Canadian series these days could mean anything from 8 episodes or 6 episodes up to 22 episodes. And it's one thing to say, it's great that I have a steady gig, but a steady gig of 8 episodes and a steady gig of 20 episodes is a totally different thing.
Very different. Yes. Yeah, especially if you're a low budget show like Blackstone is.
You get, right.
You know, we're shooting for 6 weeks, but I mean, I'm the lead character on Blackstone and I get 18 days of work. That's not, and that's not a substantial income. So being able to do both shows was great. I mean, Blackstone, I'm there for, you know, the passion of the project. And Arctic Air was a great CBC show to work on. It was fun, awesome people, and it was a little bit more financially sustaining.
Right.
Yeah.
Going back over some of the years, and I always tell people when I'm talking to them that I go to the two Bibles of the web, which are Wikipedia and IMDb.
Right.
And I never know absolutely how accurate they are. I just trust at a certain level that for some reason someone will have edited them.
Yeah.
but for the years leading up to Arctic Air and Blackstone, just a lot of different TV series, TV movies. Were most of those shot in Canada? Or
Yeah, all of them were shot in Canada, actually. Yeah,
so, I mean,
all the American shows I've ever done have all been shot in Vancouver.
Okay, so there you go. There's a couple things that I didn't realize until after the fact that I recognized you from, because I was a huge Battlestar Galactica fan when it got redone. Okay. So I know, I as soon as I saw the scene from Caprica, I thought, I mean, I found all that stuff too. Leading up to where you've had these two steady gigs over the past few years, how is it, because you're in Vancouver, is there always a sense of, or based out of Vancouver, is always a sense of optimism that because there's so much shooting there, that there is work to be had? Or is it still pounding the pavement, a struggle in between gigs, finding something to do?
Always a struggle, always pounding the pavement, always trying to find something to do in between gigs. You know, that's just the life of a Canadian actor. I mean, I'm assuming that it's that way in other cities as well. But certainly in Vancouver, no matter how much you have worked in the past, it can go at any moment, the drop of a hat. You know, since Arctic Air was canceled, I haven't worked much this year. I did do Blackstone and I did a few days on different shows here and there over the year, but it's been a hard year this year.
Yeah.
And funnily enough, there's been more work in this city this year than there has been in the last 15 years. So it's just all a matter of timing. There's no reason for me not to be working. It's just the way it is right now.
Is it a matter of, I guess there is a certain ebb and flow between characters that match up with what you're able to do as well. I mean, don't get me wrong. You just told me the story of how Blackstone didn't originally necessarily match up with you, but you don't necessarily get that opportunity to sway a character all the time either.
No, not always, but I mean, it's your job as an actor to walk into the room and to make the director see why you should get this role.
For sure.
I mean, I've auditioned for roles that were written for men and landed them.
For sure.
You know, you never know. Like, that's your job as an actor, is to create a character and sell it.
Where did the acting bug first get you? I noticed, and you can tell me if I'm wrong, but I'm looking at your bio, originally from Coquitlam, BC, so I'm assuming that's accurate.
Yes.
Okay. So... So did acting first hit you back, you know, back as far as elementary school or high school?
I would say, well, I've known pretty much my entire life that I wanted to perform in some way. You know, when I was really young, I thought it was going to be figure skating. But that didn't work out. Figure skating is ridiculously expensive. And I had to give that up at 14.
Yeah.
But that same year that figure skating left my life, drama was introduced in junior high school. And that was free. And it was a class that I could take in school. And I fell in love with it. And we did Wizard of Oz in grade 9. And, I was involved in the drama in any way that I could. I was a teacher's assistant for the grade 8 class when I was in grade 10. And then, you know, high school musicals in senior high school and that. And then after high school, I joined, it was called Spirit Song Native Theatre Company in Vancouver at the time. It doesn't exist anymore, but
community this, group theater, essentially?
Well, no. What Spirit Song was it was a First Nations theater company.
Okay.
And they had this program that was paid training.
Okay.
You could just go in and take this 9 months theater arts program, and they paid you to be there every day, which was perfect, absolutely perfect for me. And that sort of got me in the door in local theater. And one day, the Spirit Song got a call from Theater New Brunswick.
They wow. were
looking for, yeah, it's a very weird story. They had been looking across Canada for an actress that was 19 of age that could go on tour with Theater New Brunswick's young company that could play somebody who could play an 8-year-old. Someone over 19 that could play an 8-year-old. So at this time, back then, this was when, you know, we didn't have magical computers and all that. They had a fax machine. So they faxed my headshot and one other girl's headshots from the school. We had just graduated from the theater arts program. And they called back and said, okay, Carmen, she looks younger. And they flew me out to Theater New Brunswick, you know, just like that. I didn't even audition for them. They were just so desperate to find somebody who could fill this role. And I toured with them for 5 months, I think.
Wow.
That was my first time ever being on an airplane. First time ever leaving home. And, that was my kickstart. You know, I had, started auditioning for local theater after that and touring with different theater companies all across Canada for years.
Wow. So yeah. Now was that was largely stage work?
Yeah, that was all. Yeah, it was all theater. My first 5 years was all theater. And then I did a play in Vancouver called Danceland. That was my first Jesse nomination.
Okay.
And there was an agent in the audience, and she approached me after the play and said, you know, I'd really like to represent you. And I didn't know anything about the industry at that time. I'm like, sure. Okay, cool. That's the way it works. Somebody sees your work and they offer to represent you. I didn't know that most people actually had to go pound the pavement and audition for agents.
Right.
Yeah. So I, all of a sudden I had an agent, and she started sending me out for film work, which I'd never even considered. I was going to do all theater. And, I started booking. And I've been doing TV and film ever since.
So do you, somewhere in the back of your mind, do you still consider yourself a theater person? Or have you pretty much, or have, the reason I'm asking is because I've talked with a couple actors now in discussions, and they've said, while they enjoy theater, they love television more than theater, because in their minds, they get put on the spot to be perfect for an instant. Whereas in theater, they feel like they have the opportunity to craft and recraft and recraft as they're doing a production over and over again. And they like that kind of pressure, that immediacy. But I mean, I look at them as two completely different disciplines.
They are.
Yeah, for sure. And I'm wondering if you end up thinking that you've forsaken one over the other, or they're two parallel things that just happen to be running. I don't know when the last time you did theater as well. That's probably another question as well.
No, I haven't done theater in many years. You know, there's not a lot of money in Vancouver theater.
Sure.
Unfortunately. And not a lot of people in Vancouver go to see theater, which is really unfortunate as well. Because we do have some good theater. We have very, very, very talented.
I had a couple of friends of mine who were just working on the Evil Dead musical production in Vancouver.
Oh, my goodness. I'm going to have to go see that. That sounds amazing. You know, I miss theater. I do. It's just, you know, you can't make a living at it here, as far as I'm concerned, unless you're one of the elite that's been doing it forever in the city, and the artistic directors of the main theaters here know who you are.
Yeah.
It's very difficult to break into. I do miss it, but I think, you know, my career kind of took a turn years ago and put me where I'm supposed to be.
Do you think that you were able to transfer? How many transfer? I think a lot of people would think to themselves, well, easily you could transfer. Everything's a transferable skill. You could transfer it all over. But I would have to think that television and film bring its own unique skills that you're not learning from theater. I mean, you're learning character maybe from theater, but there's a lot of skills that you're going to have to learn along the way that just aren't transferable from a theater. back?
Oh, absolutely. I'm still learning. I've been doing this for over 20 years now, and I'm still learning things about the film industry. I mean, it takes a long time. My mentor, Lori Triolo, she teaches Meisner technique. She always says that Meisner said it takes 20 years to learn how to be an actor. And I don't think that that's just theater. I think really it does take that long to learn how to get centered and be authentic. Some people have a natural gift and are able to portray and create different characters right from the start. But the technique takes a really, really long time to get ingrained.
I love that aspect of authenticity that you just brought up, because one of the things that I live a lot of life doing podcasting and live online as well. And one of the things that I love talking about is this manufactured authenticity, this idea that at some point, you can train yourself and you can build up your craft and artistic sensibility enough that you can present as authentic. But that mere concept itself is antithetical to the entire concept of authenticity.
Right.
But does it matter if the person who's watching you honestly believes that you're being authentic?
Huh. That just scrambled my brain.
But I mean, that's really what character is all about, is tricking people into thinking that you're authentic. You can be authentic, but ultimately, their belief of you being authentic is far more important for the purposes of entertainment, let's say.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Than whether you're being authentic or not.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But what the audience, a lot of audience doesn't understand, though, is that as an actor, when you are in that scene, you are in that moment, you are feeling and experiencing everything that that character is. I cannot portray an emotion without actually feeling it.
Right. And there are different schools which would go against that as well. I mean, I think of there's that famous, very theatrical background, that famous anecdote between Dustin Hoffman and Laurence Olivier, mm-hmm. where I think Dustin Hoffman, a marathon man, in order to get prepared for a scene, ran around a track for an hour in order to tire himself out. And when he came back in, he was sweating and gasping for air. And Laurence Olivier looked at him and said, "Why don't you just try acting, man?"
Right? Yeah. Some people are very, very method, like Dustin Hoffman. And some people can just portray emotion just like that.
Exactly. I do believe it's time for a beverage update.
Oh, my goodness. All right.
So I'll kick it off. Although I am terribly unexciting tonight. Oftentimes I will have, I'm a bourbon collector, so oftentimes I'll have a bourbon by my side. But tonight there's no bourbon by my side. It's simply... simply a bottle of Diet Coke. However, I will say that I can't be sure, but it may be artisanally drawn from a factory floor somewhere in the Hamilton region. I'm not 100% sure.
Drinking a bottle of Diet Coke or a can of Diet Coke?
Well, one of those, how much is in this one? Like it's 491 milliliters, okay. Like the small bottles.
Okay. See, drinking out of a bottle is far more sophisticated than drinking out of a can.
Yes, and they don't make the glass bottle. Well, they do, but they're very special. You have to go in certain places and buy the glass bottles. It's not like when I was growing up and I could go to the pop shop and buy bottles of pop that way. But so, pardon me?
I miss that.
I do. There was something, you had like those old Pepsi bottles which had the swirl on them, and they're good. So as unexciting as that is, I will pass it over to you for your beverage update.
Oh gosh, I am halfway through a lukewarm mug of chai tea with cream and sugar.
Oh, now would that be granulated white sugar?
No. Turbinado.
Oh, see? So you've already made it more exciting. Listen to that.
Yes, turbinado. It's fancy.
Oh. I know one of my podcast compatriots, Diane, she's always got some crazy flavor of rooibos that she's drinking. And
right, yeah.
She always throws me
great tea.
Yeah, she throws me for a loop every time because it's some kind of bizarre mixture. Let's talk a little bit. I'm curious to know. I'm always a strong believer that all of the stuff that you consume growing up, whether it's television, whether it's film, whether it's music, books, any of that, becomes such a great influence upon people as you delve into narrative and create characters. I'm curious as to some of the things that you consumed as when you were younger, whether it's, you know, being a small kid or as a youth, you know, the music you listen to, and how you think that maybe still impacts you today. Because I know I was raised on 70s television and 80s music and all of that stuff.
Yeah,
curious,
too.
When you think back to your childhood, what was it? What were some of those touchstones that you glommed onto?
Oh, my goodness. Wow. I think my favorite movie as a small child was Romeo and Juliet with Olivia Hussey.
Oh, wow.
But you know what? At the same time, I was a Brady Bunch, Happy Days kid.
So the Happy Days, it eventually became that great Tuesday night lineup of Happy Days, Laverne and Shirley,
yes.
Three's Company.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh my gosh. I loved all those silly sitcoms. And they're just so politically incorrect now.
They are. You know, we've been talking over the past many months about the fact that it's harder and harder and harder to get a sitcom that seems to work now.
Right.
I mean, yeah. You get a huge show like Big Bang Theory, which just transcended and it's like the number one show everywhere now. But it's hard to get a good sitcom off the ground. The one that I've recently just started watching because it kind of reminds me of a 70s or 80s sitcom is Brooklyn Nine-Nine, which is the one that Andy Samberg's doing. But and that's just because it's on Netflix as well. And so I'm watching it there. But I haven't seen that yet. Yeah, it's interesting. And the thing I like about it, it's shot like a teleplay. I love the old teleplay style of sitcoms where you had one big set and you could shoot, if you wanted to, you could shoot an entire 22 or 24 minute episode on one set if you had to.
Yeah.
There's,
what was that Dave Foley did years ago about the newsroom? Is it called Newsroom?
Why am I blanking? Was it the newsroom? It wasn't the newsroom.
It was something like that, though. But it was like, I really liked that style, too. Like, it was that teleplay style.
Yeah, exactly. Why am I blanking on this now? Anyway, I'm trying to find it. News Radio.
Yes.
That's it. And that had such a great cast in it, too.
Yeah, it really did. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, Dave Foley and Stephen Root, who was just amazing.
Yeah.
There was just great. What about music growing up for you?
Everything and everything. You know, I was talking to somebody the other day and telling him about how, you know, when I hear like Crosby, Stills, Nash and Young, that album Deja Vu, and just remembering my mother dancing around the living room with me on her hip to that, or like putting on the Doors for me to take my afternoon nap, you know, that kind of stuff. And then, you know, I grew up in the 80s as well, so I love all types of 80s music. But, you know, coming from, you know, that 70s sort of hippie time and growing up in the 80s, I was introduced to anything and everything. Like, I've been singing since I could speak.
Right.
So I love anything that I can sing to and anything that I can harmonize to. So my musical tastes range from, you know, classical to musical to, you know, death metal to, you know, 80s glam bands.
was it music of your parents, or did you have older siblings?
No, I'm the oldest.
Okay.
Yeah, music of my parents.
Yeah.
So, yeah. No, but I like everything. It's very difficult to disappoint me with music or, you know, any type of film.
I used to be very elitist in high school about what music I liked. I was the equivalent of a music snob without realizing it at the time. and since then, I've come to look back on all the stuff that I've held such derision for when I was in high school and absolutely fall in love with it again.
Right. Yeah.
Like all the poppy 80s stuff that like I couldn't listen to then without cringing. And now I go back and listen to it.
Oh, it's so fun. I was thinking that too the other day, like that song came on the radio that I didn't necessarily really like back then,
yeah.
But I love it now because it's nostalgic.
And there's the thing that I've been loving over the past couple of years is, when I listen back to songs, they soundtrack my life for me.
Right. Yeah.
So instantly I get transported back to a time and place when I listen to that song and I hated it at the time, but now it puts me right back into like the cafeteria in high school or something like that. And I just think.
Yeah. And every time I listen to anything from the Tragic Kingdom album, No Doubt, I feel like such a great album. Right. But every single time I hear a song from that album, I feel like I have morning sickness again.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. That was an album where I remember I was in a cover band at the time. And we had a female lead singer, and we'd go travel around and do a bunch of, and I bought that album because I loved the early stuff because it was kind of like that ska tinge to it.
Yeah.
And I really dug it. And then I got that album and I listened to it. And my favorite song off of it was the song that stuck out like a sore thumb. And I thought, no way is this ever going to be a hit. And it was Don't Speak.
Uh-huh. Right?
And I
wasn't that their first hit?
No, they had I'm Just a Girl.
I'm Just a Girl. Right.
Right. They had I'm Just a Girl and Spiderwebs, I think.
But didn't all three of those songs kind of hit at the same time?
Yeah, very soon after. But so I bought it based on I'm Just a Girl and Spider. I think Spiderwebs was the one I bought it based on. I listened to it and I think, oh my God. So Don't Speak, what a great song.
Amazing.
And no one, and it's going to be one of these album cuts that nobody else knows about. And it's going to be like a thing that I listen to and I really dig this track.
Yeah.
And then it just blew up and I went, oh, God. I got sick of the song after. Now, I don't mind going back and listening to it now, but yeah. At the time it was insane.
Yeah.
The fact that you associate it with morning sickness is pretty scary.
Well, I listened to it a lot when I was pregnant.
For sure. So have you ever, a bunch of actors that I've talked to talk about going, you know, taking their shot down at pilot season down in LA. Have you ever even considered doing something like that?
Yeah, I tried for many years.
Yeah.
I mean, I went down.
It sounds horrible.
Times it, you know, I didn't really like the whole LA vibe. And then for 3 years in a row, I tried to go down for pilot season. And for 3 years in a row, something happened to keep me in Vancouver. So I just kind of, after 3 years of trying, I thought, okay, well, the universe is trying to tell me something. Maybe I should just stay put. So I stayed put.
Yeah. I cringe when I hear stories of it because it sounds like it's just horrible. It sounds like it's a cattle call kind of thing. And
it does sound horrible, doesn't it?
It's.
Yeah, I'd rather put myself on tape here and see what happens.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. It's almost like when I was in a band and you used to do like showcase nights where there'd be like six bands on one bill and you get like 20 minutes. And it's like, I don't want to play 20 minutes. That's disgusting.
Yeah.
So what as of right now, what is the future looking like in terms of schedule coming up for, you know, the next season of Blackstone? Have we heard anything about dates or anything like that? Or
we haven't heard anything for sure. Nothing is set in stone. We usually get word that we've been picked up pretty close to the day that we go to camera. Okay. It's always kind of been a whirlwind sort of shoot. They're aiming, if we get a fifth season, they're aiming to start shooting probably April, May.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, that makes sense if you're shooting a little bit north of Edmonton.
Mm-hmm.
You wouldn't want to go too much before that.
No.
That could be a dangerous situation. What else? You've mentioned that this year has been a little bit of a lean year, but have you had any interest on the pre-roll side of production in terms of writing, producing, that kind of stuff?
I'm not a writer. I do have producing credits on a few things as of this year. There's a couple other projects that I would like to get off the ground. It's just a matter of, you know, getting the paperwork in for funding.
Yeah, exactly.
That's always the hardest part for me is that I'm not a paper person. So it always takes me a really long time to get around to those things, and to do it properly, I have to get, you know, I have to hire somebody to put grant applications in for me.
That's a job by itself, isn't it?
It really is. Yeah. And understanding how to write a proper grant application is very important. And I'm not good at it.
Yeah. You almost, it's like, do I really have to mention these keywords? And it's like, yes, you do.
You do. Yeah.
Is there a role at this point that you're thinking to yourself now? Admittedly, you know, you've hopefully got, you know, many more years of Blackstone coming up. But is there a role to yourself that you think, I want to play this as soon as possible? Like if there's something that you could like sink your teeth into, and maybe you could even say whether it's a television role or a film role, is something that you feel that you've missed on all the years and that you like to go back to, or something that looking for, you just say, this is the story that I need to play. This is the character I need to play.
I definitely missed out on playing Juliet. I'm a little old for her now.
but there's so many reimaginings. Come on.
Well, yes, I suppose. But in my mind, she's 13, right?
Okay.
I don't know.
Would you have any interest in doing a and I'm not implying anything by this, but I'm thinking a Taming of the Shrew-like character.
Ooh, maybe.
Yeah.
That might be interesting. I do want to do some sort of fantasy roles at some point. I mean, I love the show Once Upon a Time. I'm kind of addicted to that show right now. I love Game of Thrones and Lord of the Rings and, you know, all the stuff that's been going on the last few years, Harry Potter and that kind of stuff.
I noticed that you got, I mean, in addition to some of the sci-fi credits, you got a couple credits on like Supernatural and stuff like that. And, I mean, a lot of that stuff shoots in Vancouver.
It does, yeah.
I mean, in addition to that, they've got a lot of superhero stories going on there too.
Oh, gosh, wouldn't that be amazing? I'd love to do an action film.
I think you need to be a superhero is what it
I think
to.
I need to be a superhero too.
Yeah. With all the superhero shows shooting up there. Yeah. and they're reaching further and further down into like the you know, into the well of superheroes as well, because they're creating more and more shows.
Superheroes. They're creating their own superheroes now. They're running out of stories to tell.
Oh, the trouble is the Marvel Universe and the DC Universe have like thousands upon thousands of characters banked. I think that's what you need to do, is you need to find the one that you go, aha, this is the one that no one would expect.
Right. Half-breed superhero.
Well, thanks so much to Carmen Moore for joining me on the TV ABC's podcast this week. We hope that you enjoyed it. We hope you enjoyed the conversation. And I urge you, if you listen to the podcast and you haven't watched Blackstone, maybe you're a fan of Arc de Guerre, but you haven't watched Blackstone, go onto the APTN website and really, really watch this show, because I am now hooked. I am watching every episode of Blackstone. I enjoy it that much. You can get in touch with us here at TVA by going on Twitter to TV_EH. You can go to TV-EH.com and hit the podcast button to find all of the past episodes that we've done. If you'd like to support us financially, although no, you don't have to, you'll always get these episodes for free. If you go to Patreon.com, that's Patreon.com/TV_EH, you can support this podcast by as little as $1 an episode. You know, if it's worth it for you each week to listen to this podcast, we give you that much entertainment. We'd ask if you consider it, you might want to do that. You can find all of the other podcasts I do at anthonymarco.com. You can find me on Twitter at @AnthonyMarco. And that wraps up another episode for this week. And now back to your regularly scheduled programming.